the federal government controlling the public lands is unconstitutional. Wyoming has the largest government per capita in the United States. I think that we need state sovereignty. I think we need to get in control of Wyoming.
I just love campaign season. Here we go. Good morning, my friends, and welcome to another scintillating episode. From high above all other pedantic and puerile forms of Wyoming mainstream media, this is Cowboy State Politics. I, of course, am your illustrious host, David Iverson, broadcasting to you from the base of the Bighorns in beautiful Buffalo, Wyoming. This program is Wyoming's most listened-to political podcast by far. And it's a good thing, too, considering how many redcoats we have wandering around this great state of ours, many of whom are seeking higher office. It's the goal of this program to expose each and every one of them for you. And to do that, we're going to interview as many candidates that are running for office as we possibly can. And the truth is, if you don't hear your candidate on this program, well, you need to seriously ask them why, because I guarantee that there's a reason there. We're going to begin this campaign season with the candidates for Wyoming governor. As far as I'm aware, there are four people who have announced that they're going to seek the governor's mansion. And those are, of course, Governor Mark Gordon, Brent Bean from Sheridan, Rex Rammel from Rock Springs, and James Quick from Douglas. I finished the interview with Governor Mark Gordon yesterday afternoon. So we've got all four of them, and I'm telling you, you're going to be able to tell the differences between the candidates in their responses to the questions. Now, as you might imagine, some of their responses are the same, some of the big issues like energy and inflation and those sorts of things. But there are some differences, and you're really going to be able to tell. We're going to begin the gubernatorial forum this morning with my interview with Rex Rammel. Before we get to any of that, some completely egregious self-promotion. You can listen to the podcast on any of your favorite podcasting apps. iHeartRadio, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, really any of them will work. But the easiest way is just to go to the website, cowboystatepolitics.com. There, you can find all of the shows, as well as any of the articles that I might bring up during the course of a program. If your name is Sleepy Joe Biden and you have no idea what's going on, well, you can go to cowboystatepolitics.com, pull up an article, and educate yourself, just like you should have been doing from the very beginning, but are too dumb to realize it. We begin this morning with the Pravda on the Platte. Of the 31 stories that are on the front page of their website, 9 of them are about abortion. We all could probably understand a couple of them since, for Monday, for the first time in United States history, there was a leak that came out of the Supreme Court concerning the upcoming abortion ruling. I mean, that kind of makes sense. But 9 of them? I won't bother you with their drivel, but I just think it's interesting that they devoted 1/3 of their news coverage to abortion. I suppose their behavior is similar to the cow pie bashing the Republican Party as often as they do. A couple of thoughts on this leak from Monday concerning the Supreme Court. First, there's nothing in the Constitution that even remotely relates to abortion. This whole right to privacy thing, it was made out of whole cloth in 1973. Yeah, it's total bunk. The entire Roe v. Wade decision was as wrong-headed as Plessy v. Ferguson. You remember that one, don't you? That was the whole separate but equal decision. That's the case that Brown versus Board of Education reversed. Secondly, one of the main arguments that the left uses concerning abortion is that it's settled law. It's been settled since 1973. We can't go back and review it. That's just ridiculous on face. I just gave you one example of a decision that was reversed by a different court. So why is it such a big deal that there was a leak that came out of the Supreme Court? The whole process that the court goes through is one of intellectual freedom. They debate each topic back and forth, and it has to be a free and open exchange of ideas. if there's a threat that some of their deliberations are going to be leaked to the media, well, then it's not free and open. They can't have honest discussions about the Constitution without undue outside pressure. Right after Politico published their report about the leak, there were people right in front of the Supreme Court building protesting. So now there's a potential for our justices to be influenced by outside forces. It's a very, very dangerous situation for the court and ultimately for our republic. Of course, people have always tried to influence the decision of the Supreme Court. I mean, who could forget what Chuck Schumer said?
Republican legislatures are waging a war on women, all women, and they're taking away fundamental rights. I want to tell you, Gorsuch, I want to tell you, Kavanaugh, you have released the whirlwind, and you will pay the price. You won't know what hit you if you go forward with these awful decisions.
Now, that was before the leak. Just imagine what's possible now. Like I said, this whole situation is very dangerous for the court. Whomever leaked that document needs to be prosecuted, if that's possible. I don't even know if it's a law or not, but they definitely need to lose their license to practice law forever. My second thought on this whole situation is, if that leaked document is genuine, and everything points to it being so, then if Roe v. Wade is going to be overturned, then that means that after 5 days, remember the bill that was passed in the past legislative session, the abortion trigger bill? Well, if Roe v. Wade is overturned, that would effectively ban abortion in the state of Wyoming, except in rare instances of rape or incest or significant danger to the mother. But other than that, it would pretty much be banned. An effective abortion ban in the state of Wyoming is absolutely a good thing. Cowboy State Politics is brought to you by Morton Buildings. If you're in the market for an outbuilding or a garage or a barn or a roping arena or a giant warehouse, or if you just need some huge building to hide all of your fancy summertime toys, well, then you need to call my friends Nick and Jesse at Morton Buildings, 307-674-2532. These guys are the experts in metal building construction, and they've been doing it longer than anybody else around. So if you're in the market for any type of metal structure, give Nick and Jesse a call, 307-674-2532, or you can check them out on their website at mortonbuildings.com. To kick off our gubernatorial candidate forum is Rex Rammel. We had an interesting discussion in the tea room at the Occidental Hotel. If you're ever in Buffalo and you want a cool place to check out, you need to go down to the Occidental. It's a fully restored circa 1908 or around there hotel and saloon. It's an amazing place, and I really suggest that you go check it out. So here's my conversation with Rex Rammel. So here's the plan with the candidate forum. I have a list of questions that I asked each of the four candidates for Wyoming's governor. During all of the four interviews, you're going to hear very little commentary from me, because the whole point is for you, the voter, to get a sense of how each candidate responds to each question. I haven't released any of the questions to any of the candidates, and I wanted to make sure I completed all four interviews before I released any of them to you. So here's the first one, Rex Rammel. We're coming to you today from the historic Occidental Hotel, and I'm joined by Rex Rammel. Rex is running for governor of Wyoming. Rex, welcome to Cowboy State Politics.
Hey, thank you very much.
This is the way it's going to work. Same thing we did with the congressional race last year. I've got a series of questions that I'm going to ask each candidate. I'm not going to publish a single interview until they've all had a crack at answering. That way, nobody knows what's coming. Nobody knows what their answers are. We'll make it as fair as we possibly can. So, Rex, first, why don't you just tell us about yourself and let us know who you are?
Well, thank you. And thanks for anybody that is listening to this interview. And I appreciate Dave. Giving me this opportunity to let people know who I am and what I stand for. I'm a veterinarian from Rock Springs. Lived over there for about 5 years. And I still actually practice veterinary medicine, but in my spare time I run around and campaign. I have my wife and four kids. I've been married for 39 years to the same woman.
Wow.
So that's
congratulations.
That's a good accomplishment these days, especially.
Indeed.
So I've got, you know, some pretty strong feelings about marriage and family, and I'm definitely a conservative, as you're going to find out, on just about every issue. And I look forward to explaining some of my positions.
Okay, great, thanks. So the first question is, why in the world do you want this job?
Well, this isn't the first time I've run for a high office. This is actually my third time to run for governor. In 2010, I ran to be the governor of Idaho. I grew up over by Jackson, but on the Idaho side of the Wyoming line. So I got into Idaho politics 15 years ago, and there was a lot going on over in Idaho at the same time, a lot of public land issues. They had dropped the wolves in on Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming. Wyoming put up a pretty good fight over the wolves, but Idaho and Montana just laid down and let them drop them in on us. And that got me wound up, because I like to hunt elk and I knew what the wolves would do. But it wasn't just that. Growing up that close to Yellowstone National Park, there was all kinds of issues. The timber industry had been taken away. Roads had been closed. There were just more and more restrictions all the time on public land use. And that's kind of how I got into politics, was fighting back on some of this stuff. After the 2010 election, I felt like I had done as much as I could politically, and I'd raised some hell over in Idaho trying to break the establishment powers over there. So we moved to Wyoming, and I told my wife, I said, it's a cowboy state. It's got to be good. And of course, we both grew up on the line, so to speak, so we had a lot of friends and people in Wyoming. But when we got over here, I found that it was as big a mess as it was in Idaho. And I didn't quite know what to do about it. I thought, can I get away from socialism and liberal policies and takeover of the public lands? Can I ever get away from this? And I decided that the only way I'd get away from it is if I did something about it. So here I am. I did enter the 2018 governor's race as a Republican, but those guys had way too much money for me, so I backed out. I did run on the Constitution Party ticket and got a start, so people knew that I was interested in the position. And then this race has rolled around, and things have kind of played my way. And I'm feeling pretty good about things. Okay. So here I am running for governor.
All right. So what's the number one challenge facing Wyoming citizens?
Well, I don't think there's any question about it. The energy industry's got to be saved. I think the left, the Green New Dealers, have made an all-out assault on fossil fuels. And of all of the states, Wyoming has the most at risk. I think 70% of the fossil fuels that come out of Wyoming come off public lands. And the public lands are what they're trying to shut down. So that's the fight. And it's right up my alley because, like I said, I've been dealing with public land issues. I actually wrote a book in 2008. You can actually find a copy of it on my website at rammelforwyoming.com. And in the second chapter, I make a legal argument from 2 years of research on that the federal government controlling the public lands is unconstitutional.
I tend to agree with you.
Yeah,
in fact, there's a lot of people in the state that agree with you.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but in our time, I think I started the movement for the public land transfer. After I left Idaho, I noticed Utah picked it up. Got some momentum going, and then it moved to Wyoming and Taylor Haynes. He picked up the issue along with others. There's Marty Halverson, and there's a number of people in Wyoming that. And I'll tell you, I lived in Gillette for a year, and I talked to Senator Mike Enzi, And I asked him what his position was on the public land transfer, and he said he agreed with it. I think it's a good move. It was good 15 years ago. It's good today, but I think the Wyoming people are starting to come to the realization that we better do something or we're not going to have a state.
For certain. So my next question is, I think everybody is aware that inflation is at probably a 50-year high. I couldn't even tell you what the number is, and I follow this stuff pretty close. So as governor, what, if anything, can you do to help Wyoming citizens when they're facing the highest prices at the grocery stores, highest fuel prices that I've ever seen in my lifetime? What can you as governor do to alleviate that?
Well, I hate to beat a dead horse to death, but I think the public land transfer would solve a lot of problems for Wyoming. And so we're talking about getting control over 30 million acres, okay? And what that would do is not only would Wyoming benefit from that, but I think the other western states would follow us. And I think it would bleed down into the South and the Midwest. And I think what you'd see is a states' rights revolution starting right here in little old Wyoming that would roll through most of the United States. And what would happen is not only would the public land be returned to the states where it properly belongs, but a lot of other things would happen also. I could see Wyoming challenging the authority of the Department of Education and all of the other unconstitutional powers that the federal government has usurped. I think you'd start to see those come back to the states, and we would put the federal government back in its limited constitutional role that the founders saw. And when that starts to happen, I think you'd see the economy and the culture of the United States change. I mean, I'm talking about a revolution without guns, and take the country back to its foundation principles. And I think that's the only answer I can think of on how to solve this, all these serious, serious problems.
Okay, so if you were to be successful in your run for governor, you'd have to comment on national and international issues, just like every other governor does. What's the number one failure of the Biden administration?
Oh, geez. Well, it's probably his advocacy for climate change. I would say that's got to be at the top, because if they weren't pushing the Green New Deal on us all the time, we wouldn't have these high fuel prices, number one. And countries that are energy dependent on other countries, their national security suffers. You can see what's happened over in Europe. The Germans and the French and all those guys, they can't even fight back because they're dependent on Russian oil. So they've been limited on their national freedom issues. So I think energy is, as energy goes, so does a country. And I think you can say that in the state of Wyoming, too. As energy goes in Wyoming, so goes Wyoming. So that's got to be my number one. But he's got for Biden's failure.
He's got a truckload.
He's got quite a few failures, the border, Afghanistan, on and on.
Well, it's always interesting for me to just ask people, what their thoughts are on, what's the number one goof up that they made? And you'd be surprised at how many different answers you get. So So let's kind of stay on that same topic of energy. For a long time, we've been having a problem with our coal export port in Oregon. They basically shut off the port, and the legislature a few years ago passed a bill that would have alleviated that, and it would have allowed Wyoming to fight back against the blocking of our port, and Governor Gordon vetoed it. So as governor, what next?
The public land transfer. I said, I hate to beat this horse to death, but if we get control over our land and our resources, then we can start to deal with some of these states. We're not in a position to negotiate is the problem. We're dependent on the federal government, and they got strings attached to everything we do. And how can you be in a good position to demand or ask for anything when you're controlled? This is a state sovereignty issue. And dealing with Washington and Oregon, if we had control of our resources, I think we may be able to work something out.
We'll get back to the interview in just a second, but first, a completely obscene profit timeout. Right now is the highest we've ever seen gun markets, and the best performers are the vintage collectible firearms, Winchesters, Colts, and rare military weapons. Over in Cody, Gunrunner Auctions is one of the leading online auction houses in the country, and they're celebrating their 23rd year. Gunrunner Auctions is unique in that their specialty is estate firearms. They get calls all week long about lifelong gun collections coming to auction. Scott Weber, the owner, has been into firearms for almost 60 years. He'll travel to the estate and first appraises the firearms for the heirs and then takes them to his Cody auction facility, where he and his team research them, and sometimes they get factory letters from the Cody Museum to learn more about each firearm's history. Every month, beginning on the 7th, Scott and his team post 500 fine firearms for sale. All of them start at $20 with no reserves. Gunrunner Auctions only charges 15% for selling your precious firearms. They've sold the personal collections of Elvis Presley, Steve McQueen, Alex McCord, and Herb Parsons, just to name a few. With their 40,000 bidders in all 50 states, they'll realize the highest prices for your precious firearms. That's GunrunnerAuctions.com. Don't forget about the Cowboys State Politics Facebook page. Like it, share it, follow it, and tell everybody you know about it. Of course, I'll post all of the episodes there, but also anything I find during the course of the week that I think you might be interested in. You can also reach out to us on social media. There's accounts on MeWe, Getter, Gab, Facebook, Twitter, pretty much any of them. So if you want to get a hold of me, just shoot me a message on one of those platforms or send me an email. The address is david@cowboystatepolitics.com. And now, back to the program. Now, I spend a lot of time in Cheyenne, or at least I have over the last year anyway. And one of the things that I hear from the Redcoats, the more liberal Republicans that we have in the state, is that we have to balance our revenues. We have to raise taxes. Do we need to raise taxes?
No, absolutely not. In fact, Arthur Laffer, the economist for President Reagan, came to Wyoming not too long ago, and there was an article that he had written or reported on his visit to Wyoming. He said the last thing Wyoming should do is raise taxes, that our government's too big, and the thing to do to stimulate the economy was to cut spending. Wyoming has the largest government per capita in the United States, so that's where we start, right there. And the government is so large in Wyoming that the money that's allocated to or appropriated to pay salaries and it gets thinned out, diluted, so that we're having a crisis right now in Wyoming. There's a lot of people that are leaving the state government. They don't want to work there anymore. One of the main points is that they're not being paid as much as their contemporary people in other states. But if we refined our government and really honed in on what the mission is, we could reduce our spending and increase the salaries of those people that do stay and work for us. But if you have this huge government, you only have so much money, you got to spread it out amongst everybody. No wonder their wages and salaries and whatever costs that they that or whatever expenses that we have. That's why we're in the trouble that we're in.
Speaking of spending, the biggest item that Wyoming spends money on is our education system. In fact, we spend probably more money per student than any state in the nation. In fact, in the last 2 years, the price per student, or the amount that we paid per student, has gone up. Last year it was $18,000. This year it's going to be $20,000. So as governor, what's the number one thing you can do to get a handle on our school budget?
I think the whole education system has got to be reformed. I think we've proven that money doesn't solve the problem. There are fundamental problems with Wyoming's public education system that need reformed, and I think it starts with school choice. And not only school choice, but so school choice means parents can take their kids to all forms of education, parochial, private, homeschool, charters. Charters are part of the public school, but they need to have options. And the money should follow the kids. So if a parent decides to go to a private school, whatever the legislature appropriates would be awarded to that student. And I think that if we did that, you'd start to see a difference in the education system. Competition from all these groups would drive the price down and improve the quality. And I want to say something to any teachers or administrators in the public education system that are listening to me. Usually we get a lot of kickback on this idea of school choice, but they need to realize that if they're talented, which they are, they would be in more demand than they are now, and their job security would probably be better. As long as they hold out and say nothing but public education in Wyoming, the greater the risks that they won't even have a job, because the system is failing. It's not working, and it hasn't worked for a long time. The difference is that in the past, Wyoming's had plenty of money. But the money's not there now. It's possible that if we get the public lands management public land management transferred back to the state, that we could have another windfall, which we probably would. I'm almost certain that our economic situation would change. But if I were the governor, I wouldn't grow government with that money. I would try to reduce property tax burden and keep the taxes really, really low in this state to entice more people to come in. And that's the way I would approach the whole budget situation.
Okay, I have two more questions. And one of these you probably knew was coming. We're in Buffalo, and one of the main industries here in Buffalo is hunting and fishing. Okay, now when I Googled your name, the first thing that popped up was an incident about poaching an elk.
Yeah, okay, so, I'm glad you bring that up, actually.
So I'd like you to explain what happened there.
Yeah, thank you. And number one, I wasn't poaching. But that's what happens when you play the political game. They'll spin things out of context to make you look as bad as they can. This happened in Idaho in 2010. I killed an elk in the wrong zone. I was on the wrong side of the line. It was my fault because I didn't read the regs correctly, but I had a license, I had a tag, the season was open, and I presented the elk at a check station. So I tell people, I say, what poacher kills an elk in the middle of the day and then hauls it up to a check station to have it checked in? So that's really not the definition of poaching. So I appreciate you helping me clear that up.
Well, actually, I was curious about it.
No, that's okay. You know, it comes up, and I just don't have enough opportunity to explain it.
Okay, last question. And again, we're in Johnson County right now, and our other big industry here, aside from minerals and hunting and fishing, is our agriculture. So not only are ag producers getting killed by inflation and dramatic increases in prices, things like fertilizer, some chemicals have gone up in upwards of 100%. They're getting killed by consolidated markets. You know, the prices that they're being paid, you know, when they sell their livestock are extraordinarily low. And most of that is due to only a couple of companies having control over the sale of their livestock. So as governor, what's the number one thing that you could do and why to help livestock producers?
Well, I come back to the cause of all of our problems, or I'd say 99% of our problems, and that is federal control. The federal government has allowed a monopoly over the slaughter plants, okay? They've recently tried to give out grants to build new, smaller plants, but and those things are good. But what I don't like about our situation is that a lot of these things are out of our control. And it's because the federal government, you get a president, you get a Congress that is liberal, and they start messing with the politics of states, and this is the result. You don't control prices, and your markets are limited. I think that we need state sovereignty. I think we need to get in control of Wyoming. I think there are solutions out there for these problems. We can start using some of the, it'd be nice to have a major slaughter plant in Wyoming that could handle our beef. And then the people of Wyoming eat the beef and export the product out of the box. We're not in that position right now, but I surely would favor something like that. And along with the other commodities, we need to be able to cut the strings with the federal government and take so that we can have control over our lives.
Well, Rex, I'd like to thank you for taking the time to sit down with me and answer some questions. You're welcome on Cowboy State Politics anytime you like.
Thank you, David. I appreciate it.
After we publish all the interviews, anyway.
Okay. Yeah, thank you.
Well, good luck on your campaign.
I didn't say anything about this during the course of the interview because I wanted you to hear Mr. Rammel's response. Mr. Rammel said that he likes to hunt and fish. I do too. I have my entire life. The one place on this globe that I find the most peace is at my family's cabin in the Bighorn Mountains. When I'm there with my fly rod in my hand, it doesn't matter what's happening in the world. It's just me, the crick, and my fly rod, and the beautiful fish that I'm about to catch. The reason why it is, and it continues to be, the best fishing spot in the Bighorn Mountains, that's in my not-so-humble opinion, is that we manage that resource carefully. We are very, very careful at whom we let go up there, how many fish they catch, and that we leave the creek in the condition that we found it. Wyoming's wildlife exists in the abundance that it does because we manage it carefully, and the way that we do that is with our hunting and fishing laws. And so, taking an elk in the wrong area is poaching. That is the very definition of it. And ignorance of the law is absolutely no excuse. I can give you a long list of people that absolutely mistakenly shot an animal in the wrong area. They lost their hunting privileges, they lost the animal, and they were darn lucky they didn't lose their truck and their freedom. Spin it however you want, but that, my friends, is poaching. And frankly, it really irritates me. Okay, that'll about do it for this installment of our gubernatorial forum. On Saturday's edition of Weekend Update, we'll have a conversation with Harriet Hageman at the Wyoming GOP State Convention. Until then, have a good rest of your week, and I'll see you in Sheridan. From the base of the Bighorns in beautiful Buffalo, Wyoming, I'm David Iverson, and this is Cowboy State Politics.